reflection during that time. Allow me to briefly indicate some of the themes that I regard as very important for our budget vote. Firstly, the importance of the legislative program for 2012, in particular the Constitution 17th Amendment with its accompanying Superior Court's bill, which is before this committee. I'll be very pleased to understand in terms of the time frames, because we regard those bills as very important to be finalized as soon as possible. There is also the issue of the traditional courts bill, where significant progress has been made regarding this bill, even though it is very clear that it is very complex. We are hopefully nearing the end point. We'll be highlighting during the budget vote some of the measures that were undertaken through the NCOP to address the concerns that have been raised in respect to the traditional courts bill. These measures that we'll be highlighting hopefully will be responding to what appears to be a fierce opposition to this traditional courts bill, but I'm sure the NCOP will be able to indicate what the way forward is. On the legal practice bill, there is significant progress that has been made regarding this bill, which is also very complex. It has been in gestation for many years now, but we are hopefully nearing the end point, especially of the certification stage, and I'm very optimistic that by the time our budget vote comes on the 17th of May, the Chief State Law Advisor would have certified it. I'm sure at the time we'll also elaborate on the outcomes of this important bill and the engagements that we continue to have with the legal profession. The second theme that I would like to highlight are some of the key policy initiatives that are underway that are aimed at strengthening our constitutional democracy and advance the transformation of the judicial system. Firstly, the policy framework document on the transformation of the judicial system and the role of the judiciary in a developmental South African state, I think, is common cause that we released that document in February with widespread comments that are being made by people from all walks of life. We have received many positive inputs on this document. Many institutions and commentators have asked us for an extension of the deadline for the submission of the inputs, and we have acceded to that request, so the deadline will be on the 31st of May. Of course, the input from this committee will also be greatly appreciated. Second key, which is related to that document as well, is the assessment of the impact of the decisions of the Crown Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal. This is also a move that has been welcomed, in particular by the judiciary and the legal profession. As we know, the Supreme Court of Appeal is at the apex of our jurisprudence, except in matters in which the Constitutional Court has exclusive jurisdiction. We believe that this assessment, together with that of the Constitutional Court, is necessary and desirable. We have the invited bids from interested research institutions and people, and they were very optimistic that the exercise will be catered within our baseline allocation. You may be aware that the closing date for the bids is the 4th of May next week, after which an evaluation will be done on the bids in accordance with the applicable prescripts. The third point in terms of some of the key initiatives will be releasing very shortly after the budget vote a document titled Framework on the Transformation of State Legal Services. We are pioneering fundamental reforms to improve the efficiency of the state legal services. We are doing some internal consultation on this document, which we believe will revolutionize the state legal services in South Africa. The third theme that we want to highlight is the issue of access to justice, especially programs and interventions. As a cluster of government, the justice, crime prevention and security cluster, we have programs that are aimed at transforming the criminal justice system. We've got initiatives that are there to accelerate the fight against crime, in particular against corruption, which the members of this committee are very familiar with. But also, importantly, there is an initiative that we are undertaking together with the judiciary in terms of the civil justice reform program and advancing also towards a court-based mediation. All these initiatives are at an advanced stage of discussions, and we are hopeful that very soon we're going to be seeing results of it. We continue as well to focus our attention on the services that are being offered by the Office of the Chief Master, which is very important in delivering justice services to our people. But having said that, we also acknowledge as a department some of the challenges that the Office of the Chief Master has, in particular acknowledging the limitations of the guidance funds offices, and that services are only accessed through service points countrywide. These are some of the areas that would like the assistance of this committee in order to get more additional funding in order to extend these services to our people. On TRC implementation, despite many challenges, especially in tracing of outstanding beneficiaries, we have made some progress in the payments of reparations to those who were identified through the truth and reconciliation process. About 97% of beneficiaries who are eligible for reparations have been paid out, but we are currently making an analysis of these payments that have been done so far, and will provide more details during the budget policy statement. The issues around court performance are also of crucial importance. We are putting measures to monitor court performance, and we have, in collaboration with the judiciary itself, established some effective coordination measures to enhance court performance. We are putting appropriate structures to implement the case flow management, and in our last meeting with the Chief Justice and the Heads of Court held about 2 weeks ago here in Cape Town, there is a lot of progress in my view, and more consciousness amongst the judiciary to move towards effective implementation of case flow management. Court infrastructure and record management, we also face many challenges in this front in respect of court infrastructure, in particular maintenance and missing records. I'm sure the members of this committee experienced these during your recent visits to our courts, especially in Southern Gauteng. This has also been brought to my attention. We are allocating funds to this particular area in order to address this. So hopefully when next the committee visits our courts, especially in Southern Gauteng, the situation ought to have improved. The fourth key area is the issue of enhancing the capacity of our courts and the entirety of the justice sector to ensure that justice is seen to be swiftly and effectively done. There are four main areas I'd like to bring to your attention. Firstly, the increased appointment of judicial officers, both judges and magistrates. It's something that we are promoting so that we can be able to have sufficient numbers of our judicial officers. The second one is the training of judicial officers in order to ensure that we increase their competence as judicial officers, especially in specialized areas. The South African Judicial Education Institute has started in earnest to have this training program, which we appreciate and fully support. Thirdly, ensuring that many approved posts are funded and filled, in particular within the National Prosecuting Authority, because it's a very important arm of ensuring that justice is done. Fourthly, with regard to the Special Investigating Unit, I'm mindful of the length of time that the office of the head of the unit has been vacant, and also that the acting head also carries her responsibility as a deputy national director at the NPA. I am pursuing this matter with the president and trust that a permanent head will be appointed as soon as possible. But I'm in contact with the acting head on a periodic basis to discuss some of the key challenges that are being faced there, including the issues of creating internal capacity so that we gradually do not want to rely on outside consultants, but there must be internal and effective capacity at the SIU. The fourth area, just briefly, the creating of an enabling environment for the Arms Procurement Commission. We have interim accommodation that has been found in Salvocorp in Freedom Park, while the Department of Public Works is continuing with the appropriate accommodation there. Administrative staff have been procured by the Commission, and there is budget, as we indicated last year, and in this current financial year an amount of about 16 million will be expended by the Commission, which is expected to start its work next week. In terms of budget allocations, as you are aware, we have been allocated about 15.4 billion rand to the department for the 2012-2013 financial year. Of this amount, the allocation of 5.2 billion is for court services program that is going to be addressing, amongst others, those issues that I've raised in my initial input. 2.8 billion rand is for the National Prosecuting Authority, and 1.8 billion rand is for public entities and Chapter 9 institutions. But I need to highlight some of the pressures that we are feeling in terms of this budget overview by the department. Firstly, the administration cost of courts, in particular for high courts and district court level, that's the pressure that in the medium we're going to be feeling, which will require the support of this committee for additional resources, because the challenges are out there. Even though we are learning to live within our means, but I think this issue of the administration of the courts is so important that will require additional funding. The second major cost driver is the startup and operational cost for the new courts, high courts in Limpopo and in Mpumalanga. The third area where we are feeling the pressure is the issue of bringing capacity to the office of the Chief Justice will require, because we are advancing on the move that we've taken as the executive to ensure that we move towards a court-based administration of courts. The fourth pressure on our budget are inflationary pressures, in particularly around leased accommodation and municipal rates. This is largely not in our control, but within the Department of Public Works, but we are feeling it very deeply in the department. The fifth area, which I highlighted when we move towards the transformation of state legal services, it will require also additional capacity in order to strengthen that arm of the department. The sixth one is enhancing judicial and magisterial training programs. There are a lot of magistrates that are in the process of being appointed. I'm told a memorandum is on its way for my signature, so it will require a lot of funding as well. I think the next training session will be around June of this year. The last point around our budget situation is the issue of court record management, which also we are also feeling a pressure in that front and will require the assistance of this committee for additional funding. So all in all, these pressures are also being exacerbated by this 600 million rand budget cuts that effectively is on our budget, which might have dire consequences for delivery of services. But be that as it may, we are upbeat that we are moving full steam ahead in ensuring that we deliver justice services to our people. We remain on course, in particular this year, to realize our objective of getting a clean audit at the end of this 2012 financial year. I'm constantly in touch with the Auditor General and the top officials of the department to focus our attention on the areas that have been plaguing this department for a number of years. But I can safely say today that I see the light at the end of this current 2012 tunnel. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Minister, perhaps in the second round I'd like to make some remarks on increased funding and the kind of provisos that I would put, because there are certain problems in the whole administrative approach. But for the first round of questions, may I ask three? And because it is 2 years since we last saw you, it's now April of 2012, it's 2 years since we last saw you, therefore I am going to try, Chairman, to knit some of the issues that have been latent or arising over this period together with what is now current. And the first one is this. I see striking similarities between what has happened to the SADC tribunal and the way in which particularly the Constitutional Court at the moment is being approached, and want to ask the Minister about that. I need to know in particular his own role and the positions he took in the course of the whole suspension of the SADC tribunal, which was our SADC equivalent of the European Court of Human Rights. Now, when Zimbabwe disliked once too often a ruling of the SADC tribunal in the farm grab case, the Campbell case, the tribunal was suspended, because Zimbabwe didn't like that judgment. The tribunal was suspended, that is in August 2010, and a recommendation was adopted, which had been made by the Committee of Ministers, on which, of course, our minister sits. A recommendation was adopted to commission a study into the court. That assessment had to review the role and the responsibilities of the tribunal with a view to strengthening, one that prompts hollow laughter. And the billing invitation in due course included the power of the tribunal to review decisions of domestic courts. I said at the time that the equivalent here would be to suspend the Concord and to conduct a study on it. Now, lo and behold, sure enough, we do now have a study out on tender, although the Concord has not, in our case, been suspended. On the contrary, you have tabled legislation which expands its jurisdiction, and we are seized therewith. So I acknowledge the differences. But I do want to ask you, Minister, your discussion document on the transformation of the judicial system in a developmental state, so-called, makes the bold statement in 334, to which I have not received any answer. It makes the statement, there have been instances where certain court decisions are perceived not to fully advance the transformational purpose of the Constitution, therefore there is a need for debate. Now, I would think, since this document emanates from you, that you have a duty to tell us what are these instances of court decisions which are perceived not fully to advance the transformational purpose of the Constitution. Because it sounds, of course, like an excuse for having a debate, and what will follow the debate, what will follow the assessment. So I also, please, sir, on your role, can we just have a, since these 2 years have elapsed, throughout this SADC tribunal debacle, I mean, was he, as our minister, part of the recommendation for a study from the Forum of Ministers? For all I know, it may have been an attempt at damage control, because the presidents in the SADC summit had already decided to suspend the court. But what was his role? Was that study an exercise in damage control? Is this study, as assessment, is it an exercise in damage control? Did the SADC study help, or has in fact the tribunal been closed and the judges sacked? So assessments don't help if it's damage control. What, sir, has your ministry, what role have you played since August 2010 to prevent this travesty in the SADC? Because there have been a series of meetings, and because we've not seen each other, we've not been able to ask. Secondly, may I ask about the JSC? It is, I think, very clearly a vote of no confidence in the JSC itself when qualified candidates will not come forward, because they believe the result is a foregone conclusion determined by a political voting bloc. I believe one of your members, Fatima Chowan, said in so many words at the last meeting that the JSC is a political instrument, which of course it is not. It was created precisely to take the choice of the appointment of judges out of the hands of the executive. Now, the JSC itself, in its press statement, says the following. The JSC remains concerned about the number of competent and appropriately qualified candidates who are not making themselves available to be considered for appointment to the bench. For instance, the JSC could only shortlist 5 candidates for the 6 vacancies in the North and South Gauteng. Of the 5 shortlisted, only 3 were recommended for appointment to the president. The JSC urges competent and appropriately qualified candidates to consider making themselves available so as to contribute in building a judiciary that all South Africans would be proud of. Now, when the JSC says it itself, sir, there is a problem. There's a vote of no confidence in that body. And I think it is common knowledge that there is a voting bloc there. And may I simply ask you outright, are you in charge of that voting bloc? And if so, what are you going to do about the present situation where good candidates will not come forward? Are you not in charge of that bloc? If not, who is? is it Nkhwaku Ramatlodi? And what, sir, are you going to do about that? The JAC itself has now said that it has a problem. There is a second reason, in my view, for the fact that people don't come forward. Deputy Chief Justice Mojapela, in so many words, confirmed to us at the South Gauteng High Court that the chaos that reigns in that court has had the result that, in his words, is true, that advocates don't want to serve here on the bench. They don't want to be appointed to Johannesburg. In his words, the administrative backup is collapsing, which he has conveyed to the department. I know, sir, that you are facilitating the writing of the Independent Courts Administration Bill, which will be the third bill in the package, 17th Superior Judicial Council and that. So I'm in favour of your legislative reforms, and they show me that your heart is in the right place. But in the meantime, quite clearly, we still follow the doctrine of ministerial responsibility, and there is a crisis also in the administration of the courts, which is something I think that you have just kind of acknowledged. The last area, and I'll make it brief, is the NPA. When we last met in April 2010, I pointed out to you that the NPA was being restructured unilaterally by the then and still current NDPP in suspension, that it was being restructured, that it was not a good idea. You looked at certain matters. The President promised where nothing would happen until your ministerial performance agreement. In the event, after the agreement, the restructuring just continued. And now, sir, now that we have an acting NDPP, very swiftly, all those restructurings have been reversed because, as Advocate Najiba says, it was clear that especially the work of the SCCU went into a complete decline, that it doesn't work to centralize, she did, to us, that it doesn't work to centralize your reporting lines, the units, which you yourself described as pillars in the fight against crime, that is especially asset forfeiture, and the SCCU had worked. Their heads were then chopped off, new reporting lines were introduced. I'm happy to tell you that that has now been reversed, and therefore I have been proved right. Their heads are now again in charge of those units. So that is something I draw your attention to. But I want to ask you outright also a question I put to Advocate Jiba in light of the very great public background concern about what is happening around Lieutenant General Richard Mdluli. As you will know, it has been repeatedly reported that the withdrawals or suspensions of withdrawals of charges against him are said to be politically instructed, inspired or motivated. Advocate Jiba made it quite clear that it would be a sad day for the administration of justice and democracy if there had been any such instructions or if she had followed them, so she denies. I have to accept that, absent any concrete proof. But may I ask you, because I think we have to address the question, are you aware of any indirect political pressure on people like perhaps not the DPP Chauke, or was there in his case, but perhaps on people like the new appointee Advocate Murwebi, who's in charge of the SCCU? Are you aware of political pressure, direct or indirect, having been exerted on officers of the NPA in the case of the charges against Lieutenant General Mdluli?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, some of mine are elaborations on my colleague's points. The first one is not. Minister, I'm sure you must accept that the SIU plays a vital role in investigating corruption in the public service, particularly, which has been identified by the Public Protector and many others as a huge problem in South Africa. It is, in our view, essential that it function effectively and in a stable environment. And it is with alarm that we have watched the one person who was doing exactly that, namely Willie Hofmeyr, who had the most successful year to date in the SIU, being unceremoniously dumped as head of the SIU at the end of last year. Given that it falls under your ministry, as do all the replacement acting heads, we must assume that you were consulted about this move. Can you please confirm and inform this committee of the following? And there are quite a number, sorry, but was it your idea that Willy Hofmeyr should be removed as head of the SIU? If so, why? If not, did you express any reservations to the president about removing him? And if so, what was his reaction? If it was felt, as he said to us last week, that he couldn't remain as head of the SIU as well as the asset forfeiture unit, was he given a choice as to which one he would like to remain head of? If not, why not? If the reason was he was removed because he couldn't do two jobs, on what basis is it then felt that Advocate Mokatle can do the same? As you've already said, it has been vacant for nearly 5 months, and I'm very happy to hear that you are raising it with the President. And trust, can you give us any idea as to the time frames that we can expect a permanent head to be appointed? The other concern I do have regarding SIU as well is that apparently Advocate Mokatle is really not there very often. I've been informed that she has only had 4 executive meetings since she's been appointed, whereas Advocate Hofmeyr had them every week. She's apparently also in the process of reinstating people who were dismissed by Willy Hofmeyr and not following processes of, in connection with disciplinaries in the SIU. I would like to know whether you are aware of that, and if so, will you take it up with her? Then on connection with the JSC, my colleague has mentioned many of the issues already, but this problem is now becoming a real crisis in the judiciary. Such candidates are not coming forward because they know full well or perceive it to be the situation that political appointments are being made, not judicial appointments. Your own action in 2009 in postponing a JSC meeting, particularly to a date after you'd managed to replace the DA's sole representative from the NCOP with an ANC MP, does not assist in ensuring that the JSC's independence or even the appearance of independence exists. When you have one of your own MPs, Mr. Ramaklardi, who happens to also be a member of the JSC, referring to the Constitution as a shoddy compromise that should never have been agreed to, and yet he sits on the very body that is choosing candidates who are there to uphold that very same constitution. Do you not regard that as a serious conflict of interest? If so, how do you propose to deal with it, given that he's still a member of that JSC? And a member of Parliament, by the way. Secondly, just 2 days ago, we've seen more recommendations coming from the JSC. There was a judge with less than 9 years' experience on the bench who has had 58 judgments reported. This is a judge who has been 17 years on the bench with only 3 judgments reported. And yet the judge with 3 judgments reported has been recommended over and above as the judge with 58. Now the SCA can hardly be said not to be diverse, so that cannot be a justification for that recommendation. So what possible reason can there be for this recommendation, other than a political one, particularly given the fact that the judge in question was a member of the bench that decided in favour of the DA in the recent Zuma case? So my question really is also, will the minister support changes to the composition of the JSC to ensure that fewer political appointees are delegates in order to restore the confidence of the legal fraternity in the process of judicial selection? As I say, Advocate Ramaklardi's comments as acceptable? If not, what are you going to do about it? Do you also regard as appropriate that a sitting member of Parliament and also happens to be a member of this portfolio committee makes himself available as a constitutional court judge, namely my colleague Mr. Sibagnoni? If not, what do you intend to do about that? And also the fact that he sits on the JSC as well. And lastly, in connection with the JSC, your comments last week in connection with, interrogation of Judge Modrapelo for daring to criticise the process of selection in the JSC are also extremely concerning. Are you not concerned about what his concerns are, i.e. that the process is not seen to be fair, open, transparent and independent, instead of criticising him for saying so? And one has to wonder if that's why he wasn't appointed. And then lastly, this assessment document of the judiciary and judicial system, I'm not quite sure which judges and legal system, legal fraternity you've been speaking to, but certainly the ones we've been speaking to have not welcomed it at all. In fact, they've expressed extreme reservations about it. Particularly the fact, not so much the fact that you're doing it, that an assessment is being done, but by who is doing it. It's quite extraordinary that an executive arm of state is conducting an assessment into the judicial system. And I just want to ask several questions on that. First of all, can you explain why, initially in the discussion document, it specifically says that it's desirable to limit the study only to the Constitutional Court, yet 6 days after the judgment in the Zuma matter by the Supreme Court of Appeal, the terms of reference are released saying that it's now going to include the Supreme Court of Appeal. What is the reason for that? Throughout the document, mention is made that this kind of assessment is going to inform the apex court issue regarding the Constitutional Court, yet you state that this study is going to take 18 months already, and the person hasn't even yet been appointed to do the study. And yet you're wanting us to finish this legislation by the end of the year. So how is the research then going to inform that legislation at all? Because it's not going to be finished before we finalise the legislation. And I just want to ask the Minister, is it not simply the majority of the issues that are going to change the legal system are in the 17th Amendment and Superior Courts Bill, and perhaps the Legal Practice Bill, which is almost coming before the committee. So really, what is the point of this exercise? I mean, are there all other issues? There are issues that need to be looked at, but you don't need a study to do that. I think we've done most of that already in the Portfolio Committee. Is this not simply an exercise in obfuscation to try and bamboozle South Africa into thinking that you really believe that the judiciary and or the Constitution are hindering transformation, which is not true, when in fact the real agenda is to take over the only arm of state that the ANC does not control, namely the judiciary? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Minister, for your presentation. The issue that I want to touch on, a number of the issues have been raised by my colleagues. I just want to follow on the discussion document and ask you to what degree the study by the World Bank last month, which assessed the impact of the court judgments on socioeconomic rights in 5 countries, including South Africa, and has in fact found that far from being a hurdle to effecting change, the judgments from South Africa's Constitutional Court have in fact been overwhelmingly pro-poor, and have, relating to education and health, have benefited more than 80% of the people who fit into the narrow definition of underprivileged. To what degree would that study also be included? And in fact, doesn't it also make such an assessment redundant when one has a comprehensive study that has already been carried out? Now, you indicated that the judges and the legal fraternity were in favour of such an assessment, and yes, there are some that are in favour, some are opposed. Constitutional Court Zak Yacoob, in fact, has indicated that that there's nothing wrong with such an evaluation, but he did warn against the suggestion that there should be any form of cooperation between the judiciary and the two other arms of government towards reaching some sort of common understanding about the needs of the country. And maybe you could just comment on his specific words in this regard, where he said that the thesis is apparently that all branches of government aim at achieving the same result and should in some senses work together. And he said, quote, "I would assume that this cannot be intended to mean that the executive and legislature should be able to discuss matters of importance with the judiciary directly and outside a court hearing in an effort to influence it." And then there is a further comment by a legal academic, Wolf, who believes that a review that looks at the court's role in achieving socioeconomic change suggests that government believes that judges should be part of enforcing government policy. She says that this is not a function of the courts, and we agree with that, who decide constitutionally of legislation and enforce the laws, not in developing policy or making law. Now, maybe you'd like to just comment on that. And it does seem to, it's a bit strange, and yes, the 17th Constitutional Amendment Bill that is before us has come some long way, and with the Superior Court's Bill, but it seems we're putting the cart before the horse. Surely one should have that, as if one was to have an assessment, then bring possible constitutional amendments. What is intended with that assessment? Is it intended that there would then be possibly further constitutional amendments? And what would be, surely that is, what would one do with such a report? I think that is a concern that has been raised. Then on just one other issue, Minister, there's a flood of questions, and I do appreciate you might not remember them all. But when the NPA gave our presentation, and we understand the independence of the NPA, one of the striking concerns was the estimated number of cases they would finalise for the next financial year. Now, excluding ADRs, alternative dispute resolutions, their numbers would be down from 340,000 down to 300,000. When one bears in mind escalating crime levels, that would surely be a matter of great concern to all of us, the decreasing number of cases that are finalised through the courts. And maybe you'd like to comment on that. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I just want to commend the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development for opening an office in Mpumalanga. That, to me, is very important. Because, you see, as far as I'm concerned today, justice is only accessible to those who are rich and those who are highly learned and those who were historically advantaged. It is very difficult for rural women, for rural people like those in Mpumalanga to access justice. So I thank you, sir, for having done that. And I would like to further request the department to make sure that the officers must not just be in Nelspruit. They should be visiting points in the region, because our people there are highly poor and highly unemployed. It's very difficult for an ordinary person to actually travel to Nelspruit, I think.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to the members who have contributed to this discussion. The first point I want to highlight is that I don't invite myself to the portfolio committee. If the portfolio committee invites me, I come. So I should not be blamed for not attending the portfolio committee when I never received an invitation. So if an invitation is extended as it was, that's why I'm here. On the subject tribunal, this matter I delegated to my deputy, Andres Nell. So I suggest if the portfolio committee wants to know the details, the nuts and bolts of this issue, they need to invite Andres Nell to present before this committee. But what I'm aware of is that it was never a position of myself and the deputy minister to disband the SADC tribunal. In fact, the report I received at a meeting of ministers of justice and attorneys general, which was held in Namibia, that was not the position that was taken there. Not South Africa, not even by the SADC ministers of justice and attorneys general. My understanding, subject to correction, is that there's what they call ministers of foreign affairs, something like that. But Andres Nell will be able to highlight that. So the issue of SADC tribunal should not be equated with the processes in South Africa. They're completely different. So that's why I want us to remove in our minds that this process are connected. They are not connected whatsoever. Then whatever the case may be, it is not connected whatsoever. On the JSC, I'm not aware of a political voting bloc within the Judicial Service Commission. After deliberations in the JSC, the vote is by secret ballot. So I do not know what the other members of the Judicial Service Commission vote, but we after counting the votes, they tell us what is the vote. So to say that there is a poll call voting block is devoid of any truth that I'm aware of in the JSC. As a result, I'm not in charge of a poll call voting block, nor am I aware of anybody who is in charge of a poll call voting block. The Judicial Service Commission is chaired by the Chief Justice, and I'm there in my capacity as the Minister of Justice. Parliament vote for people who must represent the National Assembly and the NCOP. That's how the system works. I do not know what Deputy Judge President Mujabelo means when he says advocates do not want to serve in his court, but I think you should ask him further for explanation. I'm not aware of that. On the NPA, what I said to this committee when I was last with them is what precisely is happening now. I was not aware at the time that the NDPP Smelane made those restructuring. I had meetings with them and also with the current acting NPA. That is why those plans have been reversed with my authority. Mdluli, I do not know Mr. Mdluli. I have no competence or authority over the SAPS. I'm not aware of any political pressure on the NPA. I'm not aware even on the police if there are pressures there, but definitely from my side, my understanding of my role is not to interfere with prosecutorial decision. I've never asked anybody to do anything. On the SIU, Mr. Willie Hofmeyer was not unceremoniously removed. That is wrong. If there's a perception that he was unceremoniously removed, it's not true. I personally had meetings with Mr. Willie Hofmeyer about this issue. He himself admitted that it is not desirable for him to hold these two positions. If you look at the genesis of this issue, Mr. Hofmeyer was not always the head of the SIU. He was employed as a deputy national director. He only was appointed by former President Begi when the contract of former Judge Heath as the head ended. I discussed this issue both with him, Hofmeyer, and also Menzies Miller. So there is no truth in the sense that he was unceremoniously removed. He was not. He's happy in the NPA. He's happy in the AFU.
Question was he given a choice as to whether he would like to stay in the SIU?
That's not his choice. He doesn't appoint himself. The head of the SIU is appointed by the president. I'm not aware of people being reinstated, but I do know there are issues within the SIU which are being dealt with at that level. Postponing the JSC in 2009, yes, with the agreement of all the people concerned at that time. Ramachoti is a member of parliament. If this committee wants to hear his views, I'm sure as a member of parliament and as a deputy minister of correctional services, you are at liberty to engage with him. But I cannot speak on his behalf. His membership of the JSC, parliament appointed him, so I'm not the appointing authority. I think Sibanyoni is here. I think he can answer for himself. He's a grown man. he applied to the Concord. He's a member of this committee, so I do not know why an answer should be solicited from me when he's here in front of you. I'm sure he can speak for himself. Deputy J.P. Mujabel, grilling. That was not grilling. As a member of the JC, I'm allowed to ask a candidate questions. So the question I posed to him were very relevant to the job that he was applying. His views are important to understand if he were to be the JP, how he looks at those issues. Why the inclusion of the SCA? Before we announce the terms of reference, as I've said, many South African institutions, they make proposals and inputs. So the inputs that we received convince us that we have to include the SCA. It has nothing to do with the SA judgment on the president whatsoever. On the issue of the World Bank, I'm not aware of the study, sir, but I will read it. I think that study, from what you are saying, proves once again that there's nothing wrong in assessing the judgments, of course. That is why I repeat again, my information is that the judiciary sees nothing wrong with this assessment that is being done. On cooperation, just to make myself very clear, I believe in our constitutional democracy and our notion of a separation of powers, but also I believe that has to be cooperation. There's nothing wrong with that. I do not understand, sir, what you mean. Maybe if you can give me the details of what the judges are saying. But I don't see anything wrong in meetings between the executive, the judges, even parliament. I meet almost twice a year with the Chief Justice and the heads of court, discussing issues of mutual concern to enhance their work there. There's nothing wrong with that kind of cooperation. The judges themselves convened an Access to Justice conference last year, of which the president was invited, I was invited, many cabinet ministers were invited, members of parliament were invited, they accepted the invitation, you attended, you were there, recall. So there's nothing wrong with forums like that, because that cooperation is the one that will ensure that access to justice to our people happens. Court finalization. There is good progress that is being made, but in good time I will give you statistics that indicate court performance, even though it has not yet reached the level that we desire. But because of this cooperation between the executive and the judiciary, we are seeing a lot of progress, even on case flow management. On the issue of Mpumalanga, thank you, ma'am. That's precisely what we mean by accessing justice to our people, because I think it is unfair that a big province such as Mpumalanga does not have a high court and Limpopo. So we took the first decision to make sure that we implement that. So in general, the discussion document, I think the document is there, out there. People can make inputs. There's nothing more I can add other than what we've put in the public domain. When we've received all the comments, we can engage the issues much further. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Mr. Jeffrey, I see your hand. I thought I would use this opportunity before the next round of questions to just briefly report to the Minister about our progress with regard to the Apex Court and the Superior Court's bill, and then I'll take the next round of questions, if that's okay with you. JJ?
Yeah, my mind was asking another question to the Minister, if this was actually to you in the light of some of the questions, but it can wait.
Honourable Members, Minister, in September last year, the committee took the position that in the light of Parliament's visit to Bloemfontein as part of its taking Parliament to the people, we would take advantage of that opportunity and piggyback with that visit and meet with judges of the Supreme Court of Appeal, which we did. In March this year, we met with the Constitutional Court judges at the Constitutional Court, and this was as a result of a letter I received in my capacity as chair of this committee from former Chief Justice Ngobo, who requested that we engage with the heads of court, in particular Judge Lex Mpati. But Judge Mpati indicated when he appeared before us here that he had no problem with us meeting with the Constitutional Court. We also undertook a trip to Germany, which was productive in many senses, but in others a little disappointing, to look at how their system works. Now, our engagements with the SCA and the Concord judges were both fruitful and productive. They gave us an insight into their views on the matter of the Apex Court. As happens with these engagements, Minister, judges obviously raised other matters as well, and we were grateful for that. In fact, SCA judges wanted to know why they had never had this opportunity before, which comes back to the question you've just raised now about, yes, there is a separation of powers, and Chief Justice Mokgweng also made this point that he didn't see a problem with the Justice Portfolio Committee meeting at least once a year with the Constitutional Court judges, as we have done. So we've taken their views into consideration, and in your introductory remarks you asked whether we are able to give a time frame on those two bills. At this point I'm loath to do so, and I'm saying this now to members of the committee: can we conclude these two bills before the National Assembly rises in June? I have a doubt about that. If not, can we conclude them soon after our return? Soon after our return. All right. You say yes, Debbie says no. So clearly, you know, we will need to apply our minds. However, Minister, we have targeted at least four other bills that are before the committee for finalization before the June recess. And these are the Trafficking Bill, Protection of Personal Information Bill, the Sheriff's Amendment Bill, and the Section 49, and maybe we'll fit in Judicial Matters Amendment. Maybe. Well, okay. I'm glad to hear you say that we must. I'm very loath to say, listen, we must hurry up. I hate that. When anyone says that to me with regard to legislation, my immediate reaction is to say, well, now I'm going to slow down. But if you say we can do it before we rise in June, so be it. Then that means there'll be five, Minister. I'm saying this before the Minister, mindful of the fact that this committee deals more with legislation than any other in Parliament. It always has been that way, and we are faced with a flood of legislation in the very near future, and so we need to bear that in mind. So, Minister, I hope that I felt that I should make this brief report in the presence of committee members so they hear firsthand what I've told you. Right, Mr. Jeffrey.
Mine were not really... Well, not actually questions to the Minister, but it was more just, I suppose, to you as chair and to the committee, just in the light of some of the points that were raised. But maybe just to say on the outset, as I understand what is, I mean, on the issue of the Superior Court's will and the 17th Amendment, you know, if it was that the two DA members were in disagreement with each other, what is good with the committee is that we interact as individuals, not with party positions. So you would find it is good that members of the same party can have different views. Obviously, ultimately, parties will go in caucus and come with a party position. We have had parties. They're here. No, they're not here. We have had parties coming with a party position in terms of this party. My party supports this bill. And then when you get to the House, you find that the party, their party doesn't support the House anymore. I'm talking about the 18th Amendment Bill and COPE. DA was always opposed to the bill. There's no problem with DA, but COPE supported the bill in the committee, and then when it got to the House, then decided they changed their mind, which was difficult in terms of we then no longer had a clear two-thirds majority on it, issue on it. So anyway, I think that's important, and I think the way we're approaching those bills is very useful, trying to find the best way, and I'm sure that we will be able to find each other on those bills, and hopefully we can resolve it soon. The issue, Chair, I was concerned about was that, and it's something we, in a sense, could wait for the Minister to go and discuss as the committee, but seeing it's been raised in the committee with the Minister, I just feel as a member of the committee the need to also raise issues. It's just a concern that particularly Ms. Schaefer's points seem to be that in a member, Ramal Chaudhry, that the certain things that he cannot say, that the censorship, you know, certain questions, whether it's as it can't be as him as deputy minister, maybe it's as a member of the JSC that he can't raise it, but I'm just concerned about that. I don't think we need to have the debate now, but she said it, and I do feel as a member of the committee the need to respond. That I think we need to debate then, are the things that as members of parliament or as members of the justice committee that we can't say. I would have thought anything is up for debate. That's what freedom of speech is about. Even the Constitution. I mean, we are amending the Constitution. We need to debate. There's a Constitutional Review Committee. My colleague, Nkosi Holomise here, is the chair. It reviews the Constitution and it looks at the Constitution was not brought down from some mountain. I think it was Ms. Cyril Ramaphosa talking about it being brought down from Table, not being brought down from Table Mountain. There are issues there we need to debate. And one of the issues, I mean, the Judicial Services Commission that the Honourable colleagues are so concerned about is in the Constitution. And they are wanting to debate whether it is the best format or not. And I think that's their right. But they're being contradictory if they're saying that you can't criticize the Constitution. And then on the issue of the JSC, I think, Chair, we've got to be careful about the National Assembly is represented in the JSC. It so happens that one of our members, Mr. Sibanyoni, one of our members of this Justice Committee, is a member of the JSC, and nobody else is from this committee. The DA, in its for whatever reason, and it's not for us to look at, has not selected the two honourable members. Neither has, I think, well, theoretically, I hear, Chair, that Mr. van der Merwe is still a member of this committee. He's on the JSC from the IFP, but I think he attends more JSC meetings than he attends Justice Committee meetings, by far. But I think we also need to look at it, this committee, what is our relationship with the JSC? I mean, the minister obviously is a member as minister in terms of, I think, the legislation. But I'm a bit worried about if we were not there, should we be speculating or asking for the minister, one JSC member, for his views around why a judge was appointed and not another? And I think that's something I'm not comfortable about as well. Particularly about but so I'm just saying that's something I think we should debate. And then I think the other issue is look, I think there is a debate in the, and it's again something I think we've got to debate in the committee. I think there was a view that I think I saw from one of the commentators in the media that you don't engage with judges. They speak through their judgments and that's it. And I don't think that's I mean, obviously the detail of the judgment you don't discuss with the judge outside. But the issues you do, and there's nothing wrong with that. The broader issues I'm talking about, not the specific issues that were before them, and particularly when it comes to issues of transformation. I mean, there is So just to highlight those as a response from other members of the committee. That's what I'm really putting it forward as. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I've just been reminded by Honourable JJ here that indeed there's a committee that has been established in terms of the Constitution to receive submissions from people who want any part of the Constitution to be amended. And we have just this morning taken a decision to, in terms of the rules, put up an advert in the newspapers and the media and other media to call on South Africans to submit any issues that they would like to be considered for a review of the Constitution by that committee. So indeed, it's a constitutional requirement that the Constitution be reviewed on an annual basis. But my question relates to the Transitional Courts Bill. The Minister may or may not be able to give this information, but then OJB here are there, and the bill is obviously before the NCOP. What I want to know is the places at which the venues where these public hearings are conducted, because this is one bill that should not be dealt with in the towns of the country, but in the rural villages. Because I've heard sometimes that some people were called to town hall meetings about this bill, and I didn't understand why they would be called to towns instead of the bill be sent to the people there. Because I think it's high time that the people affected directly by this system of justice administration must speak for themselves, instead of having others speaking for them, be they traditional leaders or civil society organizations or politicians. So I'd like to know, therefore, if that has not happened, I would urge that something be done. I don't know in what way, because it's before the SOP, for the bill to be taken to the people concerned. And secondly, my understanding is that this bill has been in English, and yet we're talking about African systems of justice administration here. And I wonder if anything has been made, has been done to translate it into the African languages, so that the concepts that are inherent in this value system are not lost through translation to other languages, such as English. So kind of a comment and suggestion and question, if there are any, they are in a position to answer the question.
Thank you, Chair. Just to say to the Minister, we welcome the report. It's very informative. And in particular, from my side, I'm actually happy with the information regarding maintenance. In the committee hearing with the department, we actually raised concerns around maintenance in terms of quotas, attitudes of court officials, and it's good that we have now received information to the effect that there's also improvement on the side of traces. I'm actually indicating this because that's an area that mostly affects women, and we know when we talk about transformation, we shouldn't actually forget the plight of women of South Africa. Not time to talk for Mr. Hoffman in terms of the question around the two positions that he occupied, but we had a hearing with the MPA, and he himself indicated that he cannot continue to occupy two positions. I'm just mentioning this in the light of the questions that were actually put forward earlier. Thank you.
All right. I think what has arisen now is two or three questions that we need to apply our minds to. And the first one is, Nwakwo Ramatlodi, MP, entitled to his views?
Yes.
Now, if he is not, as was alluded to, does that not amount to censorship? That's the first thing. The second point is that when I was informed that I would become chair of this committee, I looked back on this committee's experiences under Nwakwo Ramatlodi, and I'm not saying this as an accusation, but I just found that it was awkward for him to chair and also to attend JSC meetings, because during that period, Minister, there was an acting chair, and I didn't attend meetings as regularly as I should have because I had other duties to fulfill, but my sense was that it wasn't appropriate, and so I was grateful when the powers that be said to me, no, we've decided that Mr. Sibanyoni would serve on the JSC. I raise this because the Honourable Jeffrey made the point at the time that this committee has traditionally suffered in that we were always an afterthought insofar as representation on the JSC, traditionally. And so I then took it up very strongly and said, well, as a matter of principle, from now, the Justice Portfolio Committee must at least have one of its members serving on the JSC. So I thought I should make that as a point, which leads into the next question arising from your comments. How should we in this committee conduct a debate, a nice civilized debate, around the discussions that take place in the JSC? I put it to you to think about, because quite obviously there seemed to be a need for such a discussion. Because, Minister, I'm reminded you've been taken to task for grilling Judge Mojabelo, and you've responded as you did. But I'm reminded of someone else who was really, really grilled. Now, there's a grilling. There's a grilling. And if you compare the two, well, they don't compare. So, I think I raised this question, I put it on the table for you with that in mind. And if you're able to respond now, so be it. But I thought, Minister, before you responded to Nkosi Holomisa, Mr. Jeffrey, and Chana Majeke, I should make those comments. Thank you.
In the interest of taking this forward, I think that some of what you have just stated, Chair, is an ANC perspective when you speak about the representation of MPs on the JSC. In the case of the DA, Sheila Kamara used to sit both on Justice and on the JSC. There is no such approach in the DA. In the case of this particular committee, it was at my request that Advocate Hendrik Schmidt was deployed to the JSC. So the DA doesn't have any such approach. And I put that simply on the record. I asked for Hendrik Schmidt to be sent because he is legally qualified. In my view, the JSC should be lawyers in the event, of course, they do nothing but politics, which is ironical. Now, just on the interesting questions that you ask, it has struck me, Minister, you have constitutionally the Schedule 6 duty to consult the JSC on the whole matter of the rationalisation of the courts, which nowadays goes under the transformation of the judiciary. All of the Schedule 6, 16 issues, you do what you are constitutionally required to do. You keep the JSC informed on developments, including legislative developments. And now, because Advocate Schmidt and I talk a lot, and he reports back to me on everything that happens at the JSC, I always have sight of the JSC minutes, and I am therefore well informed. But people who do not enjoy such conversations with their MP colleagues who sit on the JSC are in the dark about developments there. But I'm supporting our chairman now when he suggests that we need a way, a modality of debating also what the JSC deals with. And I'm supporting you, and I can tell you that it is desirable and necessary, because I do see what comes out of the JSC. There will be a limit to it, of course, because MPs are represented on that body for the purposes of the selection of judges, but they are excluded from the disciplinary matters. The JSC, when it was created in the Constitution, was for the appointment process. It was not even conceived of at that time that we would need a body to conduct disciplinary matters on anything like a consistent basis. It's one of the less happy aspects of the new order, which is perhaps not unrelated to the difficulties with the appointment process in turn. But I support your idea, and it's not right, I think, for the minister himself to share with us what he shares with the JSC, or is it? Or shall we simply, by insisting on all seeing all of the minutes, keep ourselves au fait? I talk to my colleague, you could talk to yours, but you're looking for a more committee-wide input, aren't you?
I'm raising this because you raised issues that occur on the JSC, and as is your right. So I'm placed in this awkward position now. I can't stop you. I won't stop you. All right. There you go. And so I ask the question, is Nwako Ramaphosa not entitled to his veto? I'm not saying you must agree with him. I'm not saying I agree with him. I'm not saying others must agree with him. But he has views, and he's entitled to them. Well,
sure. The more structural issues about our relationship with the JSC. Now, please, let me make this very clear. I am devoted to the freedom of conscience, opinion, and the freedom of speech. And since I am so devoted, the answer to views that one does not agree with or accept is to counter-argue. I mean, that is the basic theory of free speech. What has been particularly shocking in the case of Nkwako's utterances, and I have debated him more than once on it, is the fact that he attacks the Constitution at its foundation, namely the supremacy of the Constitution and the consequential power of the courts to conduct judicial review. That is what's so shocking. But a debate is a debate, and that is my view. My colleague holds different views. We believe in free speech also within the DA, and therefore it is our approach in this committee that each MP argues her own mind until we reach a certain point where we will take a party position. I was not addressing the Ramaphosa issue at all.
Mr. Chair, seeing as I raised the issue, I would like to give my views as to why I had the concerns that I do. Of course, we believe in free speech, but when you're a member of parliament that you swear to uphold the Constitution and you're sitting on the Judicial Service Commission appointing judges, to have to do the same constitutionally. There's a big difference between you can't equate making amendments to a constitution which are provided for in the constitution itself, such as happens in the Constitutional Review Committee. That's fine. You bring changes, you say, we think this should be changed for this reason. There's nothing wrong with that. But as my colleague says, when
point of order, Chair, you invited me to deal with specific issues. Now I find myself in a very invidious position discussing about somebody who's not here, who's also a member of parliament. So maybe if the committee likes this debate, if I can be allowed to leave, if what I've come to discuss has been exhausted, then we can continue with the discussion.
Fair enough, Mr. Chair. I mean, I was responding because it was raised by my colleague, and if you want to leave it for later, I'm happy to do so. Do you have other questions for the Minister, though, before he leaves? If
thanks. On the issue of a traditional courts bill, I think the committee, my advice is that if they can liaise with the NCOP, because that process is run from the NCOP. On the issue of translation, I think the department ought to, now that you mention it, I think it's actually awkward that the bill is not in any of the African languages. I think it's a very good observation. And the comments by Mam Jeke on the issues of maintenance, attitude of court officials, the plight of women, these are some of the issues that we're trying to grapple with as a department, because some officials, they've got very bad attitudes, so we from time to time try to impress upon them to treat people, especially the public, with respect and dignity. So I think those are the issues that have been raised thus far.
Could we, and I'm trying to respond to the subject the Minister introduced, because I'm sure that we all wish to look very carefully at getting more money for justice in view of the 600 million plus of, what's the Treasury's description? Efficiency gains. We are precisely not going to gain in efficiency, and that in the case of your department is a real problem, because there's a lack of efficiency now. I just wanted to bring to your attention a couple of things. Am I right, Mr. J.B. Kusana, that division of allocation of revenues at the moment goes 80-20, 80 to staff, 20 to operations. Is that right? Oh, Mr. Johansson. It's certainly true for the regional courts. I think it's true elsewhere too. Am I not right? It should ideally be 60-40. Yes, all right, it's that. That is a problem when, if your money is going 80% to staff, only 20% to ops, that is a problem when, A, the money going to staff is not efficiently allocated, and I say that why? Because the whole OSD exercise, which is taking a lot of our money, turns out to have been misapplied. Its purpose was that legally qualified officials should be retained. We wanted to prevent their loss. But in fact, what is happening apparently is the opposite is occurring, because the legally qualified officials are now in a worse position, salary-wise, than before OSD. Other officials are now on higher salary scales than the legally qualified. This is something I won't raise it at length. I raised it with the DG. I brought her the unhappiness of deputy registrars, especially in the Pretoria High Court. She said it's a problem throughout. In PA, every other body that needs legally qualified personnel. So 80% of our money that's going to staff is already problematic, because justice is dependent on legally qualified people more than any other, and that is being misapplied. Now, as for the 20 that goes to the operations, we know that it's simply not enough. The courts can't be run with that money. And yes, we need more. But then, sir, we must be sure that it is being properly spent. And there is a real, real problem with the administration of the courts. That's why I'm so keen on creating the independent court administration. Because, with respect, government is not doing the job, can't do the job. We've benefited. One of the virtues of our visits to the courts is that we form a real impression, direct from the judges, of what their working conditions are. And therefore, we knew when the department tabled to us statistics on the Supreme Court of Appeal, which said that they had hopelessly underspent. We knew this was nonsense, because the judges, meantime, back on the ranch in Bloemfontein, are very unhappy and have complained to us about, for example, their IT and their computer equipment. But we were told by the department that under the machinery and equipment item, there had been expenditure of only 265,000 against a budget of 1.7 million. Now, we knew that was nonsense. And we were told that they had hopelessly underspent on their books and journals. Well, we know that's nonsense, because we know how unhappy the SCA is about its library. So there is a glaring miscommunication going on. Our chief financial officer budgets on the basis of what he has heard, that these people can't spend their money, therefore he cuts them back. But the exact opposite is true. That's one example of something being very wrong somewhere. But the worst example, sir, is I think that the wrong people get appointed. And in some cases, I regret to say that posts in justice are sold for 7,000 a pop, I am told. Whistleblowers have come to me. I have conveyed the information to the Director General. There are two people in court in Gauteng for precisely that, for selling jobs in justice. Now, when you buy your personnel, then you are looking for trouble. And unfortunately, it means that you're going to have criminals amongst them, people prepared to buy their posts. And the judge, Mojapelo, confirmed to us that there is a problem with crime in his court. He wants staff in the registrar's office arrested on the spot. There have been a few caught red-handed, but not one has been convicted. And he wrote to the DG to investigate corruption as a consequence. She is liaising with the SAP. She is making a task team. But these people get arrested, they get suspended, they're back there. After a day or two, they're still there rattling around in the Joburg High Court. And it is just not tolerable. They are also, of course, understaffed, inefficient, and many other things. But these are some of the considerations. Before we ask for more money, the OED has to be sorted out, the staff, the existing staff, and then on the operational staff. I mean, can we get the right people? People who can't do their job must lose their job. Otherwise, the rest of South Africa suffers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have several other questions. The Minister has referred to this input from the public regarding the SCA being included. Could the Minister enlighten us as to what kind of reasons were given which motivated the SCA to be included? Then I also want to ask the Minister if he's aware that his department committed to attend a debate on the assessment at Rose University on Tuesday evening, despite the fact that they were asked repeatedly, committed and confirmed they would be there. No one attended. Are you aware of this? And if so, do you have any reason why they didn't attend? Then I just want to ask a question of your view. It seems to me throughout the document on the assessment and the review that the terms rationalisation and transformation are used interchangeably. Now, we all know 16.6 of Schedule 6 provides that the courts must be rationalised. But what do you understand to be the difference between the two? And what do you think still needs to happen in the justice system for it to be rationalised and transformed? And then just another issue that's been troubling many of us for a long time is the issue of the sexual offences courts being closed down. It's been shown by statistics, it's been confirmed by the head of the soccer unit, Advocate Majokweni, that there definitely is a more improved rate of conviction in respect of sexual offences when they have a specialised court in conjunction with the Tutuzela Care Centre. Has the Minister had any discussions with any of the relevant parties about reinstating these units, these specialised courts, particularly with the judiciary, in perhaps in meeting with the Chief Justice also, because it really seems that child rape is on the increase, general sexual offences are on the increase. Every day we see some more and more horrendous statistics, and I think it's quite urgent that they do be reinstated as soon as possible.
You know, just responding again from the committee side or other members of the committee side to Ms. Smuts, I think she, though, through you, Chair, to Ms. Smuts, the issue of the SCA, I for one cannot say that the department gave us the wrong information. From the SCA judges' side, individual judges that we interact with, and we will, not just individual judges, we went and we had a meeting with judges of the SCA when Parliament was in Bloemfontein in the second half of last year. Complaints were about issues such as IT. Mr. Johnson, as acting CFO, told us that the SCA had underspent and then produced a graph to prove that. That surprised us, but we cannot say, as Ms. Smuts is doing, that Mr. Johnson was incorrect. I don't know. I'm wanting to put it to some of the judges I know at the SCA, do you know that you have underspent? But we can't say that Mr. Johnson is to be fair to Mr. Johnson, the acting CFO, we can't say that he misled the committee, unless Ms. Smuts has other... Yes, but even saying his information is correct, I don't know. It may be that they did underspend, and not all the judges know that. And it does, so I'm just sort of raising that point. One, to defend the CFO, who at other times I would want to be critical of. Okay, that's fine, but I'm just trying to say we don't know that information of underspending is incorrect. That's the point. And Ms. Smuts was saying that it was not correct. That Mr. Johnson may have been given the wrong information, but we don't know that. It's surprising, but we need to put it to the SCA judges. It may be correct and things. So I just wanted to highlight that point. Then, Minister, on the issue of the sexual offences courts, I think in support of what Ms. Schaefer has said, we were both at the, most of us and yourself were at that Access to Justice conference that former Chief Justice Norbo convened, and the issue came up there. I mean, our understanding is that the problem is the magistrates. That the magistrates don't want to sit in sexual offences courts, but I think to indicate that we would appreciate the minister doing what he can to ensure that those courts are rolled out, because there is a specialisation as far as evidence prosecuting and evidence and there are even facilities that are needed. I mean, intermediaries and video. Things like that. So it would be we are very anxious, I think, as a committee as a whole, that those courts are rolled out. We would support the minister in whatever he could do. We ourselves, I think, would want to engage with probably the magistrates over it if there is no progress on that issue. Minister, just with regard to our court visits, and in a sense that the issue I raised earlier with the underspending the SCA is a case in point, that does seem, it's something we've raised with the DG, that there does seem to be, because you've got these many players in a court building, whether it's a magistrate's court or a high court building or the SCA, and we have appealed or we have urged the DG to ensure that there's, I think they are there, but to ensure that it's improved, that there are responsible people from the department who everybody knows the identity of that person and what their responsibilities are. Because when you speak to some of the players, whether they be judges or magistrates or prosecutors in a building, they will complain about things in the building and not know who to turn to, or officials that they go to from the department to complain will claim that there's nothing that they can do and it's in fact they're not their responsibility. So we've appealed to the DG to attend to that issue. The other aspect linked to that, maybe the Minister, this is something that nobody else has raised, but the on our Bloemfontein visit, the issue of the, Ms. Schaefer has spoken about specialized courts, the one-stop child justice center, which is meant to be being rolled out, and I can understand, given the financial constraints, that maybe the rollout would have to be slower, but the one in Bloemfontein is really an example of best practice. This committee was not able to visit it last year. We ran out of time, although the head of that court came to brief us. The committee in the previous parliament visited it and was very impressed with it. And to again appeal to the minister to ensure, I think they have won awards, that court is given the necessary resources. We were a bit concerned that the magistrate reported to us. Chair, just correct me, what was he doing? I think the magistrate was cutting the lawn of the court. They've got a separate building, which is a house that they took over. But it seemed that he and other senior officials were having to look after the building, cleaning it as well. So just to appeal that is given support. And then it's an issue, again, hasn't really much come up, but again, while the minister's here, because we deal with the magisterial disciplinary cases, we have been concerned in the past around how long it takes them to be finalized and how long it takes for salaries to be suspended, particularly when a magistrate has been convicted in the criminal court. We have raised that with the Magistrates Commission. We had a meeting with them last year. I think the situation has improved a little bit, but I still personally feel the disciplinary cases are taking too long. There shouldn't be a reason why, if in the private sector you can be disciplined before your criminal case is finalized, why you've got to wait, according to the Magistrates Commission, for the criminal case to be finalized, and why they then have been waiting for criminal appeals and things like that. So we will be keeping the pressure on. The main minister, be a conflict of interest, some of the members here from the opposition are members of the Magistrates Commission, but I think that was generally the view of the committee as a whole, but the chair can confirm it. But it would be really just using the opportunity to appeal to the minister to also ensure that the Magistrates Commission follow the disciplinary processes expeditiously.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Just you might the quotes that I referred to from the judges, Judge Akubu, reported in last week's financial mail, if you'd like to, and it was nothing. I'm totally in agreement with you that we should meet with the judiciary just as much as we meet with you. I think the indication was the degree of influence that is tried to be exerted. I think that's the point that you want to make, but I'm fully in agreement with you about the need to meet. It's very useful. Then just, Minister, the issue of underfunding is obviously a great concern to us. And the DG raised a number of issues with us as well, just as you did this morning. And we have, in the past, assisted the department in that regard. The need is obviously to prioritize what exactly. We've got limitations as to, obviously, one wants to motivate in our resolutions the degree that we can assist you in the department. And we asked the DG to prioritize what the funding requirements would be. Clearly one has a list. Now some of the issues that you raised, she added to, for example, the issue of security. So one needs possibly to suggest that you and the DG, in providing us a priority of listing requirements, should one make a recommendation once we've in the budget process, where you would see the priorities. Clearly one is limited in exactly how many funds we've got, but in the past we have succeeded. So we just want to support you in that as far as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope the questions that I'm going to ask have not been asked before, because I had to rush out to something urgent. Minister, recently a man was fatally shot outside the Western Cape High Court. I know it's outside, but my question is, we also went to a visit with the South Gauteng High Court, and where one of the complaints was the security of judges. So my question is, can you confidently say that there's enough security measures put in place for prosecutors, presiding officers, etc., if you also keep in mind that some time ago community members were not too happy with the outcome of one hearing, I think it was a bail application, and they went to burn down the house of the prosecutor. But I mean, that is not within in the courts, but my question is just mainly with regards to security of the prosecutors and the presiding officers. Then you've also mentioned at least 7 areas where the department basically needs more funding for. Now, it seems that those 7 areas cover the whole department. My question is then, what is it that the department does not need any money for? Because from my perspective, it's basically the whole department. I have also asked questions at the last, with the security cluster. There were questions that I have asked that I posed to you. Unfortunately, you could not answer it. It was supposed to have been responded to in writing. I have not received those answers. My questions were specifically regarding the postponement of a certain case. I think it was for longer than 50 times of, I think it was a lady in Khayelitsha. It was a popular case of the lesbian that was raped and killed, and I think there were 6 accused. Definitely more than one accused. I think it was 6 accused that were present, but that case has been postponed more than 50 times, and my question was why. But also not just that question, it was also about the case about the lady that was raped, and again the case was postponed for 48 times. It seems like these numbers are I don't want to say a norm, but it's not the first time that it happens, and again my question is, why does that happen? Then my last question is, during the Soccer World Cup, the department was famously known for finalizing cases basically immediately, and now we sit with cases that run for years and years and years. Why is it that that we cannot implement whatever court measures were put in place during the World Cup for cases now? Thank you.
Minister, I want to take advantage of this opportunity also raise a few issues. We're on record as expressing serious concern about the 600 million rand budget cuts. And you've heard other members' views on the matter. My view is that it's unacceptable. Because somewhere along the line it is the people of South Africa who will suffer. And that should be our first and primary concern. The second issue, Minister, which I think I want to also bring to your attention, and if you wish to comment, we would ask you to please do so. It is the question of leases. I said this when the public protector appeared before us, that, and I'm glad Mr. Johnson is here. If the DG were here, I would have appreciated that as well. When you do your math, when you do the sums, and you work out how much it costs to lease a building in Pretoria, you come to a figure and you realize that with this amount of money, you could purchase a property very comfortably in Pretoria and put up a brand new building that could be owned by the Department of Justice or whoever else. Instead, departments and entities lease buildings, and certain individuals and organizations and companies derive huge financial benefits from this. This is unacceptable. And so if it needs this committee, and we ask you, Minister, to engage with your counterpart, the Minister of Public Works, but if it needs us to engage with Public Works, then we must do so. I just fail to understand why we pay the huge sums of money we do leasing buildings when we could very comfortably use that money to build new buildings which we could occupy, and we would make huge savings, enormous savings. I just thought I'd make those 2 points. I don't want us to get back on the question of the SEA judges and the underspending. I do know that Mr. Jeffrey left before this matter was raised with Mr. Johnson when they appeared before us. SEA judges do not spend money. They have not spent or underspent money. It's not their function and their role. Right? That money is supposed to have been spent by officials of the department. And that's it, very simply. Minister.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue of OSD, I will check the issue raised by SMATS. But my understanding is that that OSD is something that has been agreed to at the bargaining chamber. It's not out of our own making, but there's a decision and finance, I think, and public service. But I'll check the discrepancy with legally qualified staff. I'm not advised on that as I sit here. If there's something wrong with that, I'm sure we'll find ways of dealing with it. On the understanding, I think I agree with what the chair has just said, because money cannot lie. It's either you've spent it or not, so it will not be difficult to find out what the truth is. I've already answered that question that has been asked by Schaefer about the inclusion of the SCA. I can't add anything more than what I've said. I'm not aware of the invitation for Wits University.
Rhodes.
Oh, Rhodes.
Yes, Rhodes University.
Yeah. I'm sure maybe the officials, I don't know. Are you aware?
Yes, Minister. They sent an invitation when there was the chair sitting for the Minister.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but I was not there. I didn't go there. The soccer courts, the comments around that, it's not as if there was a decision to close down the soccer courts. Yeah. I think the explanation by Jeffries is the most appropriate one, because I had several meetings with Advocate Majoweni. I like what they are doing there. I was actually very disappointed that presiding officers are in fact the main culprits, quote unquote, of the decline of the special courts, because they say, according to the information that I received at that time, that their other colleagues are exposed to other branches of the law. They, day in and day out, are dealing with one issue. So that's one of the reasons why they feel that it should not be so. So, but I take the point because the statistics show that those special courts had the highest conviction rate. And when they're no longer there, the conviction rate on sexual offences is declining.
May I interrupt, Minister? Sorry, Mr. Chair, Mayor. Just to say that, yes, I mean, it doesn't appear that the magistrates have similar concerns regarding sitting on special commercial crimes courts. So it's strange that they happen to be concerned about one aspect in respect of sexual offences, but not in respect of commercial crime.
No, I'm just indicating what was conveyed to
me. I know, I'm just saying perhaps in your negotiations with them, if you do, you could raise that.
But I think in relation to that, the Honourable Adams as well, is that those special courts, they are very effective in my view. We've even seen it during the World Cup, that if they are dedicated people, focus, you can get speedy justice. On the issue of One-Stop Child Justice Centre, thanks for the comment. We are working with other government departments to roll out these to many areas, in particular the departments of social development and the police. The discipline of a magistrate is taking too long, I agree. I will impress upon the Magistrates Commission as well and the departmental officials to make sure that we speed up this, because if people in authority, such as presiding officers, are in the wrong side of the law, and these long delays as well, it does not create a bad impression of our justice system. On the postponement of those cases 50 times, 40 times, I will look into it. Security of presiding officers, that issue does not fall squarely within the competence of the Department of Justice, but we are working very closely with the police in order, we cannot guarantee top level security to judicial officers, but I'm aware that the police, especially with high court judges, they have the list of their addresses, then from time to time they do surveillance and monitoring their places, others where there is a security assessment done, they are also provided with security, but it is a difficult area in terms of resources as well, but it is the police that is in charge of that. Reprioritizing funding requirements, Swartz, I take your point. I think the department needs to go back so that they have top priorities in order, because it's clear that we cannot get all the monies that we require, but when we do, we need to ensure that the monies are deployed in areas that can give us quality outputs. On the overall comment by the chair about the budget, thank you very much. I will need your support in these endeavors. On leases, I'm worried myself. And the comments by the Minister of Public Works is a reflection of the crisis in this area. Long time ago, there was a decision that government has to buy buildings or create new buildings for government. They even called it Government Boulevard in Pretoria, in order to do away with these leases that sometimes do not make any financial sense to me when you read what we are paying in leases. It's just it's like funding the lavish lifestyles of the owners of these buildings. So my view, I think this thing is totally unacceptable, really. But my view as well is that maybe Public Works need to appoint professionally qualified people who know about property, because some of the leases that one reads about in the papers, you don't understand how a professional person could agree to such ridiculous prices for leasing a building. So that's my view, for what it's worth. But I think it is a good point that it's better for government to own these buildings than to lease them, because we know that the Department of Health or of Police will be there forever. So the signing of these ridiculous leases doesn't make sense in many instances. I do trust I answered some of your questions. Thank you, sir.
I've already brought this to the attention of DJ Sindane, who is looking at it. The Witness Protection Act says that the Office for Witness Protection must be within the department and not in the NPA, where it presently is. It is supposed to have a director, which, as I understand it, does not exist at the moment. There must be somebody acting, because it is the director who exercises such powers, duties, etc., that are given under the
Witness Protection Act. But there are good reasons, both internationally and here, why witness protection should not be in the hands of either the police or the prosecuting authorities, because the perception arises that their testimony may be influenced. It has nevertheless been the case since Bulalani's day, that by some sort of informal arrangement, as I understand it, NPA took over the offices in a certain building, but it should go back to the department. Or the law should be changed, but I think clearly the law should not be changed, because the law is correct.
I'm aware of that. I'm concerned as well. I've had several meetings with the head, who, as I understand, is on his way out, but we'll correct that. Yeah, because I've received a lot of complaints of people in the witness protection, the manner in which they've been treated. Yeah, but in terms of institutional arrangements, we are going to make sure that.
All right, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, and what is left is for me to say a very warm word of thank you to the minister and his few officials. Minister, we've become used in committee and parliament when we are visited by departments. There's a huge entourage. I don't know why, but we are so pleased to see bringing just two. It makes a big change. if you walk through the precincts of Parliament yesterday, past the old Assembly Chamber, and you found one MP, you would have been very fortunate. But it was crowded, shoulder to shoulder, with people that you don't normally see here. But anyway, our thanks to you, Minister. Our thanks for your responses to our questions and our comments and our views. And we're sure that this interaction and engagement will take us forward. Thank you very much, honourable member. Okay.